Now, this is Chris Horn. I'm with Dave Glenn of the ACC Sports Journal. And, Dave, first of all, I want to talk to you about the ACC football recruiting classes. First of all, if you could just give kind of an overview of the ACC and how each team did kind of in football recruiting, and just kind of a brief overview of some of the top teams in the conferences in the 2005 class.
Yeah, the big picture, Florida State and Miami did better than anybody else, and they're down there in that fertile recruiting territory of Florida, which produces far more players than any other state in the ACC area. And they took advantage of that and had two of the top 10 classes in the nation. Behind that pair, you had four or five teams whose classes were similar with some distinctions. I like Virginia Tech's class third in the ACC, Virginia fourth. And then we had three teams really lumped together, Clemson, Maryland, and NC State at five, you know, kind of tied for fifth. After that, the bottom tier, you had North Carolina, Duke, Boston College, Georgia Tech, and Wake Forest pulling up the rear. So we really saw it as three different tiers, with FSU and Miami on top of the other contenders, as we've come to know them, in that second tier, and then Duke, North Carolina, Boston College, Georgia Tech, and Wake Forest, not really recruiting the same caliber athletes, or at least not the same number of them, as the top eight schools.
And where do you see the, I guess, the top classes in the ACC, where do they rank nationally according to you guys?
Miami and FSU, certainly in the top 10 nationally according to most people. You know, Florida State, as an example, midway through signing day, picked up arguably the number one tailback in America in Antone Smith, and arguably the number one wide receiver in America in Fred Rouse. Both of those guys are Florida kids, and the Seminoles class looked pretty good at about 2 o'clock in the afternoon on signing day, even without those guys. So to add them and some other big-timers late in the day, that really pushed, in some people's eyes, Florida State to number one, number two, number three nationally. And that's a great accomplishment for Bobby Bowden at a stage of his career where a lot of people are using his age against him on the recruiting trail.
How is Florida State, consistently they're always able, it seems like annually they're always able to close so strong. How are they able to do that? Is that just Bobby Bowden and just the way he's able to recruit players?
Yeah, it's really, you know, they get their foot in the door with the top players because of the many things that we're aware of. The ACC titles, the contending and winning some national championships, being on TV all the time, having an unbelievable pipeline of former FSU players now in the NFL that everybody gets to see on Sunday afternoons on television. All of those things kind of get FSU's foot in the door on the top players. And as far as the late finishes, that's really a product of being involved with the very top prospects. For whatever reason, the highest-rated prospects, a pretty high percentage of them wait until close to signing day or on signing day to announce their decisions. So I call it the Pepto-Bismol form of recruiting. You really have to have a strong stomach to go into signing day with only 12 or 14 commitments and really just leave the rest of it out of your hands and see who says yes and see who says no on signing day. But Bobby Bowden's been through it enough times and that it doesn't seem to bother him. And far more often than not, he comes out of signing day with a big smile on his face.
Virginia and Virginia Tech, I've seen where they have been rated by Rivals and Scout as top 20 classes. Where do you guys have them nationally?
We have Virginia Tech in the top 20, definitely. Maybe Virginia right on the cusp of the top 20, certainly top 25. Those two classes are both outstanding. You know, you look anywhere, some people have the Cavaliers just a shade ahead of the Hokies, and others have it vice versa, as we do. I just love what the Hokies did in-state. You know, they got the quarterbacks that they wanted with Greg Boone from in-state and Ike Whitaker from Maryland. They got the Macho Harris is one of the best players in the nation at any position, another in-state guy who's going to play cornerback and probably down the road some offense for the Hokies. And Alon Lewis is one of the top tailbacks in the nation. So when you're securing your future at those important positions, you're doing something right. And I've said for a long time, Frank Beamer and his staff really could write the book on recruiting with the way they've developed great relationships with not just the kids and their parents, but the high school coaches who are located in the states that the Hokies recruit most heavily.
And you talked about some of their top prospects that they obviously landed. Who, in your opinion, are some of the, I guess, quote-unquote sleeper prospects that really could surprise the people in Virginia Tech's class?
You know, one guy that was committed to the Hokies last year, I don't know if you'd call him a sleeper because some people have decided that he's a four-star prospect during his year in military school, but William Wall, the defensive lineman, there was a guy who everybody loved his talent coming out of high school, but he just didn't have the academics at that point. So he goes to military school for a year, and he comes out. So he's not a sleeper in the sense of star rating, but I think he's a sleeper in the sense that a lot of people forgot about him coming out of high school because they knew he wasn't going to initially qualify. And then you're a little bit out of the spotlight when you're at either Hargrave or Fort Union or one of the military schools. So there's a guy who definitely has the talent to play and thrive on the ACC level, but whose name probably wasn't in the spotlight on signing day.
I am also pretty high on William Wall. What do you think, I guess, his chances of contributing pretty early, particularly since he went to Hargrave and was able to spend a year there?
That's the huge difference. You know, when we look back at recruiting classes, the number of true freshmen who had enormous impacts on their teams in that first year is not all that large. You know, Georgia Tech's wide receiver Calvin Johnson this season was a huge exception. He shows up, he starts from the beginning, he's the ACC Rookie of the Year, he's making big plays all over the place. Heck, he was one of Georgia Tech's most valuable players. But he's the exception rather than the rule. So I do think, you know, around the ACC, the junior college guys, the prep school guys have an advantage. And the number of times that, say, especially a quarterback comes in and just does great things as a true freshman is very, very limited. So you're likely to see somebody like a William Wall at least work his way into the rotation, probably not start right away because the Hokies have such a solid foundation.
And talk about Virginia's recruiting class. What really stands out to you about those guys? And just talk about a few of the players that really stand out to you.
To me, I'm excited about the linemen that Virginia got. Al Groh at UVA, especially the last couple of years, has developed a reputation for having outstanding blockers. And the one guy they got, rated by some number one on the offensive line in the entire nation, Eugene Monroe. That guy has NFL written all over him. He's, you know, 6'6". I'm not sure what they list him as, but he's 325 or so. He's going to have a chance to play right away. Brandon Albert is another guy, much like a William Wall for Virginia Tech. Not a lot heard from him out of high school because people didn't think he was going to qualify. So he goes to prep school for a year, dominates the competition, and he comes out as a four-star player. So a lot of people will tell you that the couple of the hardest places to recruit in college football are defensive tackle and the real big guys on the offensive line. And I think it's a tribute to UVA and that staff that they managed in the same year to reel in Eugene Monroe and Brandon Albert, two guys who at least have the size and maybe the potential to be in the NFL someday.
And talk about some of the skill players that they received, I guess, that they signed, and I guess most particular receiver position, which is a position I'm sure many UVA fans are interested to see if they can get some more playmaking ability at those positions. Just tell me about maybe Brandon Woods and Maurice Covington and maybe Kevin Ogletree as well.
Yeah, you know, they're a little bit difficult to gauge because I'm living down here in North Carolina, I actually got to see Maurice Covington and Brandon Woods play. They're from the same high school, Southern Durham, here in North Carolina. And Southern was not a throwing team. So you end up having to evaluate athleticism a lot more than you're evaluating the actual pass-catching skills. It wasn't like those guys had enormous numbers playing on a team that ran the ball a lot. So they're certainly great athletes. And Covington and Woods were both liked by other programs at other positions. You know, some people saw them potentially as linebackers. But Covington has the big body. He could be the kind of guy that, you know, when you need the big catch in the corner of the end zone against the 5'10" cornerback, Covington could develop into the kind of guy you go to. Woods is just a more solid all-around, not quite so tall, but a stronger kid. He was the one that some projected as a linebacker, but if he does develop those pass-catching skills, I could see him being real tough over the middle. Ogletree was not as quite as highly regarded. He's more of a speed guy out of New York State. But I'm not sure the Cavaliers got the marquee guy they were looking for at that position, but they certainly got those marquee guys at some other places.
And just talk a little bit about, you've already talked about the offensive line, but just talk a little bit about Morris. Who are some other players that really stand out to you in terms of maybe the skill position players for Virginia?
Well, Vic Hall, you have to add him to any conversation. He's going to be interesting to watch because I think they listed him at maybe 5'9", which as we all know is not all that common for a football quarterback, at least at the college level. So here's the guy who at the high school level broke all of Ronald Carey's records and just did amazing things at Gretna High School, but it's going to have a difficult adjustment potentially to the college game where the linemen are bigger, they're faster, they can easily clog the passing lanes with their long arms, and it'll be a challenge to see whether he runs into the problems that a lot of shorter quarterbacks have run into at the college level or whether he's able to just be that magical guy who doesn't have the sight. The sight lines and the height, much like a Joe Hamilton was at Georgia Tech very successfully years ago. So he's a four-star player coming in with enormous credentials, but that'll be an adjustment that I'll be interested to watch.
Do you think he could contribute early at another position, say like wide receiver?
It's possible. He's a great athlete, and I think Virginia signed him knowing that if things somehow didn't work out at quarterback, he's going to be able to help them somewhere else. So I think they'll probably know within a year and a half, maybe, two spring practices, whether Vic Hall is going to work out as a quarterback. But, in the aftermath of Marcus Hagan's playing there, it's not like it's a complete shock to the system for UVA to have a smaller guy at quarterback. But there's no doubt Vic Hall has the athleticism that if he can't play quarterback in the long run, he'll help somewhere.
And any quote-unquote sleeper prospects, I guess, in your view for UVA?
I'm not sure how high up the ladder John Phillips was rated, tight end for another in-state guy. I think he was a two- or three-star prospect, according to most people. But there's somebody, reminds me a little bit of Heath Miller's story coming out of high school. Very few people really knew about Heath Miller. Not saying that Phillips is the same talent level. That would be an awful burden to throw on anybody's shoulders. But just the unknown nature of him on the national scale and even the regional scale, but if you talk to his coaches who played against him, and certainly those who recruited Phillips, they all rave about him. So it'll be interesting to see how that plays out over the next 4 or 5 years.
And talk about some of the players that you think throughout the conference that will be impact players maybe next year, or players that fans should kind of keep an ear out for and shouldn't be too surprised to see when they start making a lot of plays.
Yeah, outside of the teams we just discussed, one guy to remember at Maryland is Melvin Alesi. He's a defensive end, 6'2 or so, 275 pounds, rated the number one defensive end in the nation, according to some people. He's just kind of a little bit like a Darryl Tapp of Virginia Tech, just bigger physically, heavier. But incredibly quick at the same time. So Alesi is going to be fun to watch at Maryland. At NC State, the number one player in the state of North Carolina, Tony Baker, signed with the Wolfpack. So even though the Wolfpack actually has some decent depth at the tailback position, Tony Baker was a guy who broke T.A. McClendon's old record for most rushing yards in a high school career here in North Carolina. So Baker's going to play right away at NC State in some fashion. Miami and Florida State just got those elite-level players. It's hard to predict which of those guys are going to play right away, but the names I mentioned at the beginning, Fred Rouse, the wide receiver for the Seminoles from right there in Tallahassee, Florida, he easily could have a quick impact. And Anton Smith, the tailback, some people have compared him to Warrick Dunn, but they believe he has a little bit more power than Warrick Dunn. So if those guys are really that good, it's going to be hard to keep them off the field, even at a place like FSU.
And in your estimation, who was maybe the most the surprise team of this recruiting class?
It's kind of hard to say that they're a huge success story because we still rated them ninth in the ACC. But Duke is used to finishing last in the ACC on recruiting day. And Ted Roof has dramatically changed the perception of Duke football on the recruiting trail. And that means with high school coaches, that means with the kids themselves and their parents. He went out and somehow signed, away from Miami, Oklahoma, and many others, a 6'6", 325-pound defensive tackle with great grades named Vince Ogabasi. And Vince Ogabasi actually enrolled at Duke in January, so he's going to get to go through spring practice. But the idea that Duke can go head-to-head on the recruiting trail with Miami, Oklahoma, and the powers of the Big 12 and really around the nation and convince Vince Ogabasi to be kind of the landmark recruit and have Ogabasi tell the press later that he wants to be the guy that changes the perception and tells other top prospects, hey, it's okay to sign with Duke in football, even though you're a 4- or 5-star prospect. So it was a decent class overall, not to the level of these others that we're mentioning, but just the fact that they got Ogabasi and a handful of others that were really in heavy demand at the BCS conference level, that's a step in the right direction for the Blue Devils.
And it's not, having a chance to read over some of Duke's recruits, it looks like they have a few pretty good quarterback prospects as well.
Yeah, Gene Del Don out of Delaware is one. Zach Asak out of Massachusetts, whose dad played for Duke. Duke desperately needed help at the quarterback position. They're really getting to a scary point, so they had to sign two or more. And they're real excited about both of those guys. They both ran very successful high school programs, and they're going to get at least a look, you know, for a backup position as freshmen. But that was a position of serious depth need for Duke, and they filled it actually pretty close to last summer when they got early commitments from ASAC and Gene Del Don.
And were there any teams that were any, I guess, disappointing in maybe how they finished or how they did overall?
I think probably the one disappointment that stood out for most people on signing day was North Carolina. Here's a team that when John Bunning was going 2-10 and 3-9 on the field 2 years in a row, somehow signed top 25 recruiting classes. So then on the field this season, you had the unexpected jump to a 6-5 regular season, and you could make a much better argument that you had things pointed in the right direction. And yet the Tar Heels were far out of the top 25, and we had them rated 8th in the ACC. Their number one commitment going into signing day, Montario Hardesty, a running back, switched to Tennessee on signing day. And according to most people, there was really maybe one, at the most 2 4-star prospects who signed with the Tar Heels. So it was kind of an upside-down type of situation. The Tar Heels miraculously managed to recruit well off of 2-10 and 3-9, but at least at first glance, it looks like they failed to follow up on that after going 6-5 during the regular season.
And just talk a little bit about NC State, maybe Wake Forest as well, just from your state, and just talk about how well they did and maybe some of the prospects to look out for each of those teams.
Yeah, NC State did pretty well. We lumped them in that group that was tied for 5th place. I mentioned Tony Baker, the tailback, the record setter, over 3,000 yards as a high school senior. It's hard to beat that. They got a lot of help at the line of scrimmage. They recruited very heavily on both sides of the line. They wanted to sign a big class numbers-wise, and they also may have found some immediate help at that position because they got a junior college All-American named Garrett Klein, who they think can step right in and help them at probably the tackle position. They also signed one of the top 5 players here in North Carolina out of Fayetteville, Curtis Crouch, who's just one of those 6'6", you know, 325-pound road graders that they think could be plugged in possibly early on. They also went into South Carolina, which has been a place Chuck Amato hasn't really recruited very well since he got to NC State. He's more of an in-state junior college and then Florida guy. But J.C. Neal, a guy who's going to start at wide receiver for the Wolfpack, or not start, but begin his career, I should say, at wide receiver, he was one of the top 10 players in South Carolina. Great quickness, good playmaking ability. So the Wolfpack mostly was thrilled with what they did at the line of scrimmage. And then Tony Baker and a kid who re-signed with them, Andre Brown, out of prep school, definitely going to shore up the tailback position.
And especially with when Miami and Virginia Tech came into the conference, obviously a lot of people thought the ACC would be the top conference in the country. With the recruiting classes that they're bringing in, where do you see the talent level, and do you feel that the talent level is improving to where the ACC may be considered the top football conference in the country?
I think it's moving in the right direction. I don't think on National Signing Day this year the ACC caught up to the SEC or anybody else. I think they took a step in the right direction. And part of what's going on here is that the ACC is just gaining a better sales pitch to compete with the SEC. The SEC has bigger stadiums. For the most part, their programs have more impressive history, more teams that have won more national championships. Until this coming season, the SEC had that conference championship game that the nation was focused upon in early December. The ACC didn't have that in the past, but now they do have it. And I think that just the addition of Virginia Tech and Miami changed things as basic as, hey, we as the ACC have this many players in the NFL right now. Those numbers for a while really paled in comparison to the SEC, and that made it easier for SEC coaches to say, hey, this is the only place to play. We're the conference that sends more people to the NFL than anybody else. When you add all those Miami players and all those Virginia Tech players to North Carolina and Virginia and the other teams that have sent a lot of players to the NFL, it just balances out the sales pitches a little bit, and in the long run, you would think that should be able to help the ACC catch up to the SEC.